burst on it. He leaned in, taking her to her back, and she helped out by breathing, "Hi," which meant her mouth was open when he kissed her. She didn't fight this time. She didn't twist away. She didn't push at him. She accepted his tongue with a moan. She'd been fighting the feeling, and she'd lost. Fuck yeah. He ran a hand from her knee up, taking her skirt with it, then feeling his dick throb when he encountered the lace top of a thigh high. Feeling that, he knew it was time to quit fucking around. So he did. Tearing his mouth from hers, he watched as her eyelids lowered and a puff of breath escaped her lips when he used both hands to yank up her skirt. She immediately locked onto his hips with both thighs. She wanted this. Panting for it. Literally. He twisted to see her leg and her thigh high clasped against his jeans at his hip, and the sight was such a turn-on, he had to fight against grinding his hard crotch between her legs. Fuck, now he had to fuck her more than he'd had to fuck her. Immediately. He plunged a hand in, pushing aside the gusset of her panties. The soaked gusset of her panties. And Millie needed to be fucked. Immediately. "Hi," she whispered, that throbbing through his dick, too, as she rubbed her wet pussy against his hand and started shoving up his shirt with her fingers.
"You want it?"
he asked, toying with her wet as he went after his belt and fly. "Yes," she breathed.
"Hard?"
"Yes, hurry." To give her something, he started finger-fucking her. She pressed into his fingers and arched her neck even as she begged. "Your cock, baby, hurry." He pulled his cock free, slid his fingers from her wet, held her panties aside, positioned and drove deep. Christ. Magnificent. Her fingers curled into his shirt under his jacket, yanked up uncontrollably, then she set her nails into the flesh of his back and dragged down. High grunted against the gratification of that as he thrust into her sleek, feeling her knees come up so he could drive deeper and she could get more. When she got it, she raked her nails back up, and that felt so fucking phenomenal he groaned, burying himself to the root and grinding. When he didn't stop and go back to fucking her, she righted her head and begged, "Move!" He wanted more of that wet. But there was another score he was after.
"You gonna give it all?"
he asked. No hesitation. "Yes, hi."
"Gonna take it, baby," he warned.
"Okay," she whispered. He kept grinding.
"Gonna play with this body."
Her breath started coming hard as she shifted her hips to try to rub up and down his cock, and her nails dug into his back.
"No rules, Millie."
"No rules," she gasped, desperate, swinging her calves in, trying to find purchase. He had her, and he totally fucking didn't.
"Am I even here?" he sneered, "or am I just dick?"
And again, like last night, thinking he had her before she'd turned the tables on him, she did it again. She opened her eyes, stared fixed into his, and replied, "You're always here, Logan, even when you were gone. But since you're here and you got what you wanted," she lifted her head, putting her lips to his and scoring his back with her nails as she finished, "Stop fucking around and take it." Powerless to do anything else, he thrust his tongue in her mouth and took it. It didn't take her long to give it all. When she did, he let go and gave it all. He was nibbling her lips and using her pussy to milk his cock after they'd both found it when she drew her hands out of his shirt and unclasped her legs from around his back. He lifted his head and stared down at her. In her pretty brown eyes, sex and fear. Fuck yeah, he got what he was after. All of it. He didn't smile, even if he wanted to. She moved her gaze to his ear, mumbling, "I have to go." He pulled out and shoved a hand between them. He shifted her panties back in place, then tucked his dick in his jeans before he pulled her up and set her on her feet, pinning her to the desk so she had it and him to support her. He kept her there, her eyes to his shoulder, one of her hands to the desk behind her, not touching him, as he did up his jeans and she used her other hand to yank down her skirt. She was closing down, but it didn't matter. He got what he wanted.
No rules, Millie, he reiterated like a warning. I need to clean up, she told his shoulder. He lifted a fist to her jaw and gently forced her eyes to him. No rules, he stated. I got that high, she replied, a thread of defeat in her tone that fuck it all he did not like. You can end this, you give it up, he reminded her. Tell me what the fuck you want so I can say no and we both can move on. Determination stole into her gaze as she replied, You don't get this, but I don't want anything. And this will end, Hi, when I finally convince you of that. He dipped closer. Got my hand between your legs. You were soaked for me, Millie. Is that a surprise? She returned. For a woman who wants nothing from me, yeah, he answered. She scored another hit when she whispered, You're beautiful. Jesus. She did not just say that like she meant it. He stared down at her, the words still ringing in his ears. Fuck him, she did. Mil, he started to growl. She cut him off, her tone stronger. And you're good at it. You are always good at it. So again, is that a surprise? You want me gone? You're not going to pant and beg for it, he informed her. I want you gone, but if you're going to give it until I can get you gone, it's that good, I'm going to take it, she stated, and finally touched him only to lift a hand, put it to his chest, and put pressure on. Now move back, I'm already late. I don't need to be later. Sensing he was going to get nothing more out of this, but having gotten what he wanted anyway, Hai stepped back. She quickly moved away from him, toward a door he saw led to a bathroom. He watched her do it, eyes to her ass, and doing that, he decided he was going to go for more, and he didn't care how late she was. So he told her back, It wasn't lost on you, what you did to me. She turned and he saw her cheeks still flushed from sex, but the rest of her face was pale and her eyes were guarded. Appreciate the orgasms, Millie, he continued, but cannot get a lock on how any woman could do that to a man, and no matter it's 10 days or 20 years, come back for more. Release me. Tell me your fucking game. If it isn't as twisted as the last one, you need to get off. I'll give that to you until I find better.
The guard went down as anger flashed.
Well, thanks, Hi. What a sweet offer.
He lost patience.
Millie ain't dicking around.
Then he braced when her expression changed again. It was fast, the suffering that slashed through it before she hit it. But it didn't leave her, and he knew it because it colored her tone. You're released. He searched her expression. Fuck, she meant that. He felt his shoulders constrict.
Just like that, he asked.
I made a mistake, she said quietly. A big one, as it turned out, but it's been made. There's no rectifying it.
The mistake? He pushed.
Coming to see you, she told him. Jesus, were they getting somewhere?
And you did that because?
He prompted. She shook her head. It doesn't matter now. Fucking shit. More games.
Millie, this is the fucking game I've been talking about, he clipped.
She flinched, not a communication of discomfort or pain, one of frustration. But he again didn't give a fuck. She was frustrated? He was too, and the woman had started this bullshit.
Christ, if you'd just spit it out, we'd be done with this, he reminded her.
She locked eyes with him. Release me.
Jesus, Millie.
You're coming to me, she pointed out. Stop it. Release me. He threw an arm out to indicate the desk and the shit he swept all over the floor and asked,
Gonna be hard for you to convince me that isn't a goal you want to achieve. Wrap me up tight in that wet pussy of yours and play with me however you want. I know that game. Caught up in it before, so I also know you're good at it.
She attempted to instigate another score. It's almost impossible to believe looking at you, knowing who you are, knowing who you were, and listening to you speak to me like that. But that was taking it too far. And Hai was not a man who allowed that shit. Not anymore. Not since Millie taught him not to do it.
Fuck, bitch, he snarled. You cannot seriously be standing there trying the guilt game on me when you fucked up my whole goddamn life. And like that wasn't enough. Waltz back into it, you looking for me to try to do it again?
and apparently what he said took it too far for Millie. He knew it when she leaned forward, her beautiful face twisted in pain, and hissed, "I've been walking through fire for you for 20 years, Logan. Do not stand in my office that you walked into without an invitation and feed me your shit. This is revenge. This is your way of hurting me after I hurt you. I'm not stupid. You want it?" She leaned back and tossed out both arms. "Take it! But I'm not gonna get on my knees and let you shove my face down so you can't see it, but you can, fuck faceless pussy, knowing exactly how much you're humiliating me. You need to take from me. I'll give it, but only because I'm giving to get. Don't tell me you didn't get when you were on your knees for me at Bill's," he sneered. "Don't tell me you didn't know exactly the insult you were delivering," she fired back. "You knew, Hi. You knew. You knew you were delivering the worst insult a man could give to a woman. You knew it, and do not tell me you didn't." He couldn't tell her that because she was right. And she'd deserved it. At least he'd thought that at the time. Staring into her face, a face saturated with fury and hurt, he was thinking twice. "Tell me how you walked through fire for me," he ordered. "No," she whispered, the words soft, but it held so much power, it left a gash in the air of the room, and he felt his chest burning like he was struggling for breath. "Never," she went on. "I was gonna give that to you, but then you lost the right to it." "So it's still game on," he noted. "Not if you release me," she replied. He decided to lay it out. "Clue in, Millie. I'm coming to you. So who's got a hold on who?"
"You've got the power to let this be over," she told him.
"How's that when I don't even have to fucking kiss you to make you drenched from me?" he returned.
"God," she cried, looking to the ceiling.
He ignored that and shared, "This isn't done. We both know it, and I'm guessing from this irritating conversation we got no choice but to ride whatever the fuck this is out. But it's me who's gotta do it, hoping you don't rip me up in the process."
She tipped her head down and again locked eyes on him. "If you think that, then you aren't paying attention."
"Baby," he drawled. "Trust me, you got my complete attention."
It was then she landed the hammer. "No, I don't, and from the way you're treating me, it's clear I never did." With that, she ended their conversation by turning, entering the bathroom, and slamming the door, and he heard the lock go. He could bust down the door, but enough was enough. The bitch told him she walked through fire for him, insinuating that there was something he fucking didn't catch back in the day. Bullshit. Total bullshit, Millie Games. And High slammed out of her office thinking precisely that. But the blow had been delivered. And he'd walked through her house and he'd seen how she'd changed, how she lived like a ghost, how she was nothing like the woman he thought he knew her to be. So he couldn't stop the nagging at the edge of his mind that Millie hadn't cut him out, but instead he'd lost her, and he hadn't only done it back then, but he'd done it again now. His Millie was gone, in every way she could be. Later that night, when High had switched out his bike for his truck, he went back to Millie's. Not her house, the alley. He knew it was stupid. He didn't care. He told himself he needed every bit of ammunition he could get in this war, and that crate was full of ammunition. He wouldn't allow himself to believe he went back for a different reason. But when he got to the dumpster and got out of his truck, he saw the crate was gone. He lifted the lid on the dumpster and saw that it hadn't been emptied, nor had the crate been thrown into it. It was a decent crate, could be used for a lot of shit. Someone had stolen it, and stolen High and Millie with it. Likely they'd toss all the photos. 3 years of living a dream, gone. He got back into his truck, his gut roiling, his hands clenching the steering wheel with fury. She'd dumped them. And now they were gone. And as he drove away, High decided the bitch would pay for that too. 22 years ago. Logan woke to an empty bed. He blinked away sleep, looked to Millie's nightstand, and caught the time on her alarm clock. Then he threw back the covers, got out of bed, and walked out of their bedroom. He didn't find her in the second bedroom, a room she'd set up as a place she could study. He knew why he didn't find her there. When she did late nights like that, she did them at the dining room table downstairs so any noise she made wouldn't disturb him. Unsurprisingly, he found her where he knew she'd be, but he found her slumped over, cheek to a notepad, books open everywhere, dead asleep. He moved around the room, shutting off lights before he moved to his girl. Gently, he lifted her away from the table, then up in his arms. As gently as he did it, she roused.
Oh, man, she muttered drowsily. Did I crash?
Yeah, baby, he replied, moving from the living room into the foyer to the stairs.
I can walk, Snooks.
Logan felt his lips curve up. Snooks. The boys called him High. Millie didn't call him High. She called him Logan, Low, and Snooks when they were in company and when they weren't. But she called him Snookums when no one was around. It was goofy and it was cute, and it was all Millie. He loved it. Halfway up the steps, he stopped and put her to her feet, but he didn't take his arm from around her. She slid hers around him and they walked up the rest of the stairs together.
You get done what you needed?
He asked.
No clue. I don't remember when I crashed, but I'm guessing...
No, she answered. Logan's lips didn't curve up at that. They tightened. It was finals. She was taking a heavy second semester schedule in hopes of graduating in 3.5 years rather than 4, so they could start their life and their family and do it without delay. She was also still working part-time at the mall. She made Dick, but no matter how often he told her she should do it, she wouldn't give up the job. She also wouldn't give up on him, the club, their life. She was all in with everything. She never missed a class. She studied between classes. She was never late for work. She studied when she got home. They went to the movies. They went to bars. They went to parties. They went to concerts. They went to rallies. She cooked for him. She cleaned the house for him. And she studied more whenever she had the chance. Business. That was her major.
Don't know what I'm gonna do with it, she told him on a grin.
Just know I'm gonna kick ass whatever it is I do. He believed that. She didn't do anything in half measures. She sucked life dry, setting her teeth in deep, straight to the bone and pulling out the marrow. But this shit had to end. She was about to finish her first year of college and she wasn't going to take a break. She was going to take 2 classes during the summer and go full-time at the store in the mall until her sophomore year started. Which meant more of this. All-nighters where he went to bed alone, woke up alone, saw her faking it and drained dry but giving him a grin and the cute when she knew she was about ready to pass out. He watched her pull off her clothes, dropping them to the floor as she wandered to their bed, and he decided it was time for this shit to stop. She got in, and Logan got in with her. Pulling her into his arms, he tangled himself up in her as she returned the favor and snuggled deep.
Babe, you gotta quit that job, he told the top of her head.
Need the money, she muttered sleepily.
You don't, he replied. I can cover us.
And he could. Chaos Business, the garage and shop called Ride, and the other shit they did, he could totally cover her and him. He could even do more. Get them nicer furniture, new shit that looked good. After a year or two, put money down on a house. Take her on vacation to get her away from her work. Take her to Paris and kiss her under the Eiffel Tower. He could give them better than what they had. He could give his girl everything. He could do that. Absolutely.
Can't do that, she mumbled, sounding very close to sleep.
Millie, he gave her a squeeze. You're gonna burn out, you keep this shit up.
Only 2 more years, she replied. Most 2.5.
Babe.
He started but didn't go on when she suddenly tipped her head back.
No, Logan, she whispered,
her voice still sounding tired, but it was also strong.
I do my bit.
You'll do your bit when you got your degree and you get a fancy-ass job that makes us a lot of cake, he returned.
I do my bit now. I do my bit every day,
she shot back stubbornly. He dragged her up his body so they were eye to eye in the dark.
You know it's no hardship me taking care of you. You also know that's my job, one I get off on. So stop being so stubborn and let me do it.
If I can do my part, I will, and I can, Lo, she retorted.
Millie, this is the third night in a row you crashed at the dining room table, he reminded her. When it's finals, it's worse, but it's bad all the time, and that shit's not good for you.
I have to. Logan went silent at the fierce tone in her voice. I have to, Logan. She slid a hand up his chest to curve it around the side of his neck. I know you can take care of me. I love how you take care of me. But I have to do this for you, for us, to prove something to myself, my parents, you. I have to. And if you want to take care of me, that's how you can take care of me, by letting me do it.
I know what you need, baby, he whispered back.
And you gotta know I don't need that.
I'm in. I know you're in. We're both in, all in. There's times I gotta have your back. There'll be times you'll have to have mine.
Let me have your back now, Millie.
It'll mean a lot you got the time to do what you gotta do, and I can go to bed beside you.
She was silent a minute, and he thought he had her. Then she shook her head against the pillow. Please understand, she said softly. I just need to do my part. I need you to know I'm going to. No, that I'm able to. Life's gonna throw a lot at us, Snookums. I need you to know I'm ready to do my bit when it does. She needed that. He knew it. He heard it. Fuck, he even felt it. And he knew why she needed to give it to him. They were young. They were starting early. They were both all in. And they both wanted the same out of life. To be together, to build a family, to build a life. Neither wanted to delay. So she needed to prove she could stick it, through thick and thin. He didn't like it, but if his girl needed it, he was going to give it. So he gave in.
Okay, Millie.
She snuggled even closer, pushing in to kiss his throat. Then she took her hand from his neck, trailed it down his chest so she could wrap her arm around him. Thanks, Lo, she murmured. It was again sleepy, but there was feeling behind it. Yeah, she needed it. So he settled in, his girl cuddled close, and he gave it. Chapter 8. Going Through the Motions. Millie. My alarm went. I opened my eyes, looked at the time, sleepily went through the magnitude of things I had to do to get ready to face the day, decided on one I could not do in order to buy more sleep, and I hit snooze. I settled back in, closing my eyes, exhausted. Because of all that was going on with Logan, I hadn't found sleep easy the night before, and I didn't sleep great when I found it. And it was getting on my busy season. I had a wedding coming up in 2 weeks, and the bride was still changing her mind about practically everything. I also had a 50th anniversary party that should go off like clockwork, but it was happening that coming weekend, so I had to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. But it wasn't just the holiday season coming, making things crazy. I was also reconnoitering clients' homes and offices to create design schemes I would present. Then I'd need to make sure I had everything to put my designs into action. Sometimes this took months, and it was taking those months, starting about 2 weeks ago. I usually worked 9 to 10 hour days and nearly always put in time during the weekends, but it was getting to my 6-day-a-week, 10 to 12 hour-a-day season. And to do that and be able to do it well, I needed sleep, something I wouldn't get if Logan remained in my life. I should never have let this game with him go on. It wasn't just stupid, it was unhealthy. When he'd showed up my house Monday night, I should have done everything in my power to get him gone. Then I should have gone to ride, talked to that tire woman, told her to stay out of my business, and also told her to tell Tack to keep Logan out of it. And to do that, I should have threatened to call the cops. Chaos did not like cops. There were a variety of reasons why, including the fact that they grew and sold weed back in the day, and maybe still did. I knew there was more to it than that, but Logan had never shared any of it. And I knew whatever that more was becoming a bigger part of club business. I knew this because in the time I spent with Logan, Chaos's antipathy toward police had grown to paranoia. I also knew it because Logan would often need to go off and do club business. Business he did not share when he got back to me. Business that could happen at any hour of the day and night. And the longer we were together, the more often that happened. Not to mention, the more wired he got when he got home, agitation mixed with adrenaline that might translate to good things like fabulous sex, but it was nevertheless concerning. As concerning as it was also Logan, and I trusted him. I trusted him to do right by me, himself, us, so I didn't question it, not ever. Until I could use it to be a means to an end. So threatening getting the police involved would make my point, and I should have done that. But I didn't, because I was weak and needy, and Logan was Logan. True, he was a new asshole Logan who cut me to the quick, didn't mind doing it, and thus did it repeatedly. In fact, he got off on it in a way I knew it was his sole purpose to come back and dish out more. But he was still Logan, older, wiser, and even better with his hands, mouth, and cock. And as fucked up as it was, I had to admit I was getting off on the game in my own way. I was not in control of it as I was in control of every millimeter of space around me, every aspect of my work, every second of my life. I had no idea when he'd show, and when he showed, what he'd do. I just knew what I'd get. His attention. As damaging as it was still Logan in my space, eyes on me, mouth talking to me, and doing other things, hands touching me. And I'd get all that as well as the orgasm he'd give me and the orgasm he'd have that I gave him. Of course, thinking all of this, I did not snooze, so when the alarm went off again, I was wide awake and had so much to do that day, I couldn't take the 8 more minutes another snooze would give me. I hit the off button on the alarm and threw the covers back, hauling myself out of bed. I went right to the bathroom, doing this again, thinking I needed cats. Another presence in the house. Someone to talk to. Someone to take care of. Someone to love. Sure, feeding them would add time to my morning routine, but to have all that, to cut through the loneliness I'd been denying was weighing on me. I'd do it. I scratched searching for kittens on my mental list of things to add to my physical list written on a pad on my desk in my studio as I did my preliminary bathroom business and walked out to put coffee on. I did this thinking about my desk and the time it had taken to write everything after Logan left the day before. I told myself it was annoying, especially since he'd destroyed my weekly delivery of flowers, got water everywhere, decimated several blooms. Thus, it took more time to clean up and the arrangement looked like crap after I put it back together, and I was good with flowers. But it wasn't annoying. It was hot. God, I was crazy. No, I was fucked up. And I was fucking myself up, letting this go on when I was supposed to be sorting myself out. I sighed as I moved to the end of my kitchen counter that delineated the living room from the kitchen. It was then I felt it. No, I felt him. I stopped dead, my head came up, and I stared at Logan leaning against the counter by the sink, mug of coffee in his hand, his chaos cut thrown on the marble beside him, wearing his uniform of jeans, motorcycle boots, and black thermal Henley, looking gorgeous. Morning, he greeted casually, then lifted the mug and took a sip. Are you kidding me? I asked. Nope, he answered after lowering the mug. I looked to the back door, then to him. You broke in?
Yep.
He broke in. To my house. I didn't have time for this. Further, it was time to end this now. Intent on doing just that, I tossed my hair, feeling the loose bunch of it wrapped around a ponytail holder at the top back of my head wobble around, and Logan's eyes went to it. I felt my thighs start tingling. Damn it! You need to leave, I informed him. He looked from my hair down my body, then back up to my eyes. His were grinning when he noted,
Nice jammies,
before he took another sip of coffee, his gaze never leaving mine. Rough, edgy, biker, bad boy, hot guy Logan High Judd, saying the word jammies, was both hilarious and a total turn-on. Though he was right, They were nice jammies. Petal pink with ivory lace, another cami and pants that were so awesome they should be illegal. This pair had lace edging the hem and the sides of the pants, sides that were cut in overlapping slits all the way to my upper hips. Sometimes I got tangled in them when I was sleeping, but they looked crazy awesome on, especially when I was walking around, so I put up with the tangling. I'd never had anyone to appreciate them. Until now. And Logan's appreciation worked, as it always did. However, I told myself firmly, I would be happy with just my own appreciation. And maybe the detached feline approval of a Burmese cat. Perhaps a Persian? Yes, a Persian. A Persian would go better with my house. I tore my thoughts off Persian cats and focused again on Logan, repeating, "You need to leave." He didn't leave. He stayed right where he was, lounging against my kitchen counter like he did it every morning, and asked, "What's the gig with your house?" Even though I didn't quite understand his question, I did know he wasn't going to catch me in this again. "Please leave," I requested politely. He ignored me and threw out his hand, holding the coffee mug toward my kitchen living room.
"Babe, this place looks nice, but it's not you."
"It's 100% me," I retorted, doing it wanting to kick myself because I should not engage. I should instead ask him to leave again. I knew this to be even more true when he took in the length of me again before catching my eyes.
"Knew you, that get up this house,"
he muttered.
"Old you. I got my dick inside you."
That did it. The dirty talk that was not all about dirty talk. The good kind that was sweet and fun and had one objective that was also sweet, but mostly it was fun. Instead, it was dirty talk that was only partly the good kind, but not intentionally so. Mostly it was meant to wound by taking more than it was giving and leaving bruises with the blows. Therefore, I stomped to the island, put my hands on it, and didn't share I had a busy day and I needed to prepare for it. Because he'd proved yesterday he didn't care about that, which was another indication he didn't care at all about me. Instead, I stated, "I'm not doing this again. This is over, this game we're playing. You need to leave, and I'm being serious, Hi." Humor lit his brown eyes when he returned.
"You're being serious?"
I tried to tamp down my annoyance, something else that didn't work. In fact, the effort only fanned the flames, and I replied, "Very." He lost none of his humor and actually looked more amused when he rejoined,
"You're cute when you're very serious. Especially being very serious in those jammies."
I stared at him as panic hit me. He was changing the game, and the way he was changing it this time, teasing me like that, I knew I was going to lose. And if I lost that, I'd lose it all. Again. Oh, yes. Panic. And staring into his playful eyes, that panic went extreme. "Please leave," I whispered. He heard my tone, maybe read my panic. The amusement fled, and he got serious. And he knew it was deadly serious, even though he didn't move a muscle. "What's the gig with your pad, Millie?" he whispered back. "It's my home," I answered, hoping an answer might get him moving on. "It's how I like it. I worked hard on it. It's perfect. Now I answered you. Will you please go?"
"It's not you," he told me.
"It's all me," I told him.
"It's not the you I know."
"You knew me 20 years ago, Logan," I reminded him. "Things have changed."
"Yeah, they have," he readily agreed.
I leaned into my hands on the counter, my body tipping his way, my hope that he'd read that body language and see my sincerity. "While we're like this, not angry, not being stupid and crazy, I hope you'll listen to me," I began. "I need you to leave, Logan. I need it. This isn't healthy. Not for either of us. We have to stop."
"Crate's gone," he shared,
and my head twitched in confusion when he did. "Crate?" I asked.
"Photos of us," he told me.
He'd searched my house. Not a surprise. Invasive and annoying, but with no rules to this game, not a surprise. "I took it out to the dumpster," I told him. And I had, in a moment of fury. The garbage man didn't come until the next day, I still had time to go out and drag it back in. I was fighting the urge and hated the fact that part of me knew I'd lose that fight, but that crate totally would be back inside, tucked in my closet by day's end, no matter how busy I was.
"Crate's gone,"
he repeated, and when I started to say something, he went on.
"Someone took it."
I snapped my mouth shut against a pain that felt like someone had punched me in the throat.
"Rode around your house,"
he told me.
"Saw it yesterday afternoon by the dumpster. It's gone now."
Oh, God. It was an ice crate. They didn't cost a fortune, but they also didn't cost pennies. And crates like that were useful for a variety of things. I could see someone taking it. I hadn't thought about it when I dragged it out there and set it beside the dumpster. Not too puny or lazy to throw it in, just knowing I'd never dig it out if I actually did that. So I'd set it by the side because I knew I was weak and I'd be back for it. Still, I was making a statement to myself, even if I knew it was lame, and I'd take it back. "It's gone?" I asked, my voice husky.
"Nice crate. You dumped it. Someone can use it. They'll do that, and to do that, they'll dump the pictures."
Oh, God, that hurt. God, it killed. Why had I taken it out to the dumpster? Why?
"Threw us away, Millie,"
he told me conversationally, then took a sip of coffee, his gaze still on me. When he was done swallowing, he continued.
"My count, this is twice."
That blow was so true, it caved in my throat and I had to fight for breath. I struggled past the pain, dragged in air, and begged. "Please don't do this. Just let it go and then go. If not for me, for you, Hi, this isn't healthy for either of us."
"Man's gotta get off and works for me. I do that with a guaranteed good lay. Seems healthy to me. And when I'm buried deep, definitely feels healthy."
I didn't hide my wince, and he didn't show he cared even minutely that he'd caused it. In fact, he didn't show that he cared much any time I made it clear he'd wounded me. No, he didn't care at all. He was playing with me to cause hurt to get back at me for what I'd done. But he'd already done that, in spades, and the more I took, the more I allowed him to dish out, the more I made it so I deserved it. In other words, if only for the sake of self-preservation, if not self-respect, this had to end. I knew it even before it began. I never should have gone to look for him in the first place. I should have let it lie. Now it was in my power to make it be over, and I was going to do that. He was not going to get it all. Oh, no. But I would give him enough to get him gone, so I could try to find it in me to stitch up the new lacerations I'd given my own damned self and get on with my life without him in it. "I saw you at Chipotle," I announced. That got me something. I watched his body visibly tighten. "I heard you on the phone. I heard what you said." My voice dropped. "I know you have girls." His stare intensified, but he didn't say a word. I did. "You looked," I threw a hand his way. "Good, healthy." I shook my head, knowing my lips were curving in a sad smile, but I didn't try to stop it. "And as ever, handsome. You were wearing your chaos cut, so I knew you still had your brothers. I saw you, heard you, and I knew you had it all. So I knew it was time to say I was sorry, to find you and say I was sorry for ending things the way I did. I know I hurt you, and I thought, you having everything you need, all you ever wanted, your brothers, a family, I should find you and give you that closure. I should give you the words I should have given you years ago and didn't. So I went looking for you." I drew in breath and finished. "And I found you, but it didn't go as planned."
"You don't know shit,"
he stated the minute I quit talking. I started, then stopped, letting out a sharp cry of surprise and jumping away from the island when he all of a sudden swung an arm out and let his coffee mug fly, the mug shattering against the cupboards across the room, the coffee spattering cabinets, countertop, and floor.
"You don't know shit,"
he snarled, and my eyes flew back to him. You... I licked my lips nervously, taking another step back to retreat from the wrath pouring from him and pounding into me, but stopping when his eyes narrowed in warning at my movements. "Don't have girls?"
"Cleo and Zadie."
Oh, God. Cleo and Zadie. cute names, probably cute girls. I could picture them in my head, female versions of him. Beautiful.
Lights of my life, he bit out.
That's good, Hi, I told him quickly. I'm happy for you.
Knocked up their ma, didn't love her,
he shared, and with each word he said, I sustained new wounds.
Fuck, didn't even really like her at the time, but she got pregnant and didn't want to take care of it, so she gave me Cleo. I gave her a ring. We both didn't want Cleo to grow up with no brothers or sisters, so we gave her Zadie. Then we gave them both a crap home with two parents that didn't give much of a shit about each other until we decided we were doing more harm than good, and we ended it.
Outside of the fact that he had two daughters he loved, none of the rest of that sounded good. I didn't want that for him. I'd wanted so much more for him. So, so much more. I'd walked through fire to give it to him. And I felt a new gash opening, knowing he'd never had it. I'm sorry, Hi, I whispered.
I don't want you to feel sorry for me, Millie,
he clipped. Okay, I said immediately.
Lived 13 years with that woman and our babies knowing each day.
He shook his head.
Fuck each fucking second what I wanted out of my life. What I wanted for my babies. What I thought I'd have with you. What I'd have to give to our kids. Doing that with you and knowing you tore that away.
And you saw me and thought I wanted closure?
You thought I wanted your ass back in my life so you could say you were sorry for taking away the only thing that gave me joy? To tell me you were fucking sorry for taking away the only shot I had at giving that joy to the babies I made?
His eyes narrowed dangerously.
What the fuck's the matter with you?
I told you I fucked up, I reminded him carefully.
Yeah, he growled. You fucking did.
Now you know how, I went on.
Now I know how, he ground out.
We stared at each other, me anxiously, him angrily. When I could take no more, I assured him. When you walk out of my house, I promise, Hi, swear, you'll never see me again.
You lied to me,
he declared. I shook my head in confusion.
I got Cleo and Zadie. Where are your kids, Millie?
I took another step back and did it wondering how I managed it.
Truthfully, his words caused so much damage, it was actually a wonder I was still standing.
Breathing. Living.
Told me, he continued. We talked about it all the time. You told me you were all about family. Worked your ass off to finish school early so we could start. And I know you got no kids. So that was a lie, too. Like your love. Like your commitment to us. Like everything that had shit to do with you.
I made a mistake back then. I forced out, the words weak, pained.
You sure as fuck did,
he returned and threw out a hand.
Paying for it in your perfect house with your fancy-ass pajamas and killer investment portfolio.
Killer investment portfolio? Shit, he'd looked into me.
Got money, babe, he sneered.
And you think you got it all.
Worked your ass off to get it. Gave me up to get it all. That's what you wanted. Not a life with a biker who had no future. You wanted it all.
He took a step toward me, his eyes locked to mine, and it took all I had left, which wasn't much, not to shrink from him. And then he kept at me, inflicting his last wound. A mortal wound, slaying me.
But I'll tell you, bitch, what you don't got, what you won't ever get. What you lost when you lost me is the most beautiful thing you can have. Your kids saying your name. Every fucking time Cleo or Zadie say the word daddy, even if they're whining or pissed about something, it lights up my world. So keep warm in this fucking joint.
He threw out a hand again, then used it to indicate me.
In your sexy threads. But you'll never get warm to the bone knowing you changed the world, created a miracle. Bringing beauty from between your legs that's got fuck all to do with an orgasm.
On that, he grabbed his cut and walked right out of my house, slamming the door behind him. And I stood still, staring at the door, the curtain over the window still swaying with the power of his slam, eviscerated, the life force flowing out of me, streaming across my gleaming wood floors, evaporating into nothing. It took some time, a good deal of it, before I moved, got myself a cup of coffee, cleaned up the mess Logan left of his, went to my bathroom to take a shower and get ready for the day. But I did it knowing I was back to going through the motions. Oh, I'd pretend. For Dot. And Mom and Dad. Justine, Kelly, Claire. And I'd breathe until there was no breath left, but that was all life would be for me. I knew it because it had happened 20 years earlier, my life leaking away as Logan walked out of it. Then I went through the motions. Now I'd do it again. But with practice, I'd do it better so those left who cared about me didn't worry. That's all I'd give. That's all I'd get. Until the day I died. And I was good with that, because once I had it all with the promise of even more. So I'd take that, because I knew that was all I'd ever get. And because I also knew I had no choice. Elvira.
Yo.
Elvira looked up and saw the commando standing in her office door. His name was Mo.
Shirley and Jackson just walked in the building, Mo told her. Checked his schedule. Hawk's not got her on it, and anyway, he's out. She here for you?
Elvira wasn't expecting her, but knew Charlene must be there for her.
Yep,
she answered. He jerked up his chin, commando style, which meant Elvira had no idea how he didn't dislocate something while doing it. He then prowled off into Command Central, Hawk's theater-style space with workstations that were wired to take over NATO or the United Nations or Cheyenne Mountain or whatever struck his fancy to play with on any given day. She took the time it took Charlene to make the office to clear her desk of anything sensitive, and she stood when Mo showed Charlene to her door. Gotta talk, Charlene said as greeting. Elvira nodded, indicated the two seats opposite her desk with a hand, and invited,
sit your ass down.
Charlene sat her ass down. Mo gave Elvira a look, then took off again, and Elvira turned her eyes to her wall of windows that showed Command Central. It also showed none of the four boys out there manning stations were paying them any mind. But she still knew they were paying attention. She looked back to Charlene, a woman she'd known a long time, a woman she'd worked jobs with, a colleague, and also a friend.
This is a surprise, she noted.
You're looking into Millie Cross, Charlene announced, another surprise. Elvira said nothing. But she'd been doing her homework, and that included the enjoyable task of pumping information from her man, Malik. Malik was a Denver cop. He'd been a cop for 15 years, worked vice the last 8. Malik knew everything about the street. So when Elvira and the girls instigated Operation Mac, Millicent Anna Cross, she'd gone to a source she knew would be a font of information. This meant she knew about Logan High Judd and Charlene Jackson. Primarily, she knew about their bond.
Don't know how that shit began,
Malik had told her after the good stuff was done. He was mellow, and they had entered the pillow talk stage that Elvira used for more than one purpose, on more than one occasion. Not that Malik minded. Her man was not stupid. He knew she always had a reason. He also knew she had a certain kind of job, so he filtered as necessary, which was irritating as hell, but it went with the territory when you had the popo in your bed.
Just know they're tight, Malik had gone on. Word was, back when they were both dirty, if Charlene had a mess, she didn't want to call Darius to handle, pile more filth on her nephew than he already had. She'd call Judd, and Judd would do cleanup. She called, he came. Not in a way she had something on him, and not in a way they were partners. So I don't get it. No one ever did, but it happened. She left the life. The club got clean, and through all that, whatever they had did not die.
In other words, although this was a surprise visit, Charlene being up in High's business that was getting interesting lately, was no surprise. We're joining forces, Charlene announced, and our first move is Kelly Cliff. Kelly Cliff. One of Millie's two besties. The one who was up for anything.
Joining forces with what?
Elvira asked, not playing dumb. Exactly. It was just that Tyra had put the kibosh on further maneuvers, After their last play went south, they decided they had to bide their time and find the right inn to instigate their next one.
On reuniting a love gone bad, Charlene replied.
Listen, girl,
Elvira started, leaning across her desk, but she stopped talking when Charlene's face changed. Elvira could read faces, and Charlene's face stated loudly that the woman was serious and she was not about to waste any time.
Hi would lose his mind, but he said I could put Brody on it, and I did. He did not say I could put Vance on it, but I did that too, she shared. My boys at work, look at them. You'd say badass motherfucker, but I know how they are. They'll go the distance for true love, prove that again and again. Gave Vance what I knew, he ran with it. Boy has his ways and what he learned, high likes it or not on the road, he's gonna be traveling. I know he'll like it when he gets to his destination. If I gotta club the man and put him on the train, I'm doing it. And the game you and your girls are playing that Vance shared with me with that King Shelter business, I know you're with me. So we're joining forces.
Another non-surprise. Vance Crowe was one of Lee Nightingale's boys. He was good at what he did, finding information and fast with little to no muss and fuss. But also, Vance's wife, Jules, was a social worker who worked at King's Shelter. So he probably knew or suspected before Charlene asked that Tyra, Lainey, and Elvira were up to something. As Elvira thought this, Charlene kept talking.
Vance had a chat with this Kelly girl. She knows the history, and it ain't no surprise she's all in. So she's up next, and I got the plan.
Elvira studied her, and she did this a while. Then she got impatient with doing it, so she said,
Well, lay it on me! Time's wasting, girl!
Charlene smiled. Then she talked. Elvira listened. Then she smiled. After that, she grabbed her cell. She made two calls. When she was done, they were all agreed. Kelly Cliff was up next. Millie. 22 years ago. I walked by our futon, Logan flat out on it, eyes to the TV, and I smiled down at him when those eyes came to me. But I didn't get by the futon on my way to the kitchen to get a drink. I got my hand caught by my man and pulled, so I landed on him. I stretched out even as I lifted up and looked down at him. He was feeling good. I could tell by the mellow look in his eyes. I could also tell by the sweet smell in the air. How you doing, Snookums? I murmured, and he grinned.
Excellent grass,
he murmured back.
Got my girl on me, so it's all good.
He ran his hand over my ass and tilted his head on the arm of the couch.
Though she's got too many clothes on.
Stoned sex with Logan. That meant he'd take his time, even hours. The best. Or the best when I got it, but it was always the best when I got it, no matter how it came. Unfortunately, even if it was the best, we didn't have hours. You do remember that Dot and my folks are coming for dinner? I asked. He rolled, so I was pressed to the back of the couch and his face was in my neck.
I didn't forget. He said into my skin. Come down by then.
I know you will, Lo, I told him. And I did know because he was careful like that. He never disrespected my parents. It was part of what won them over. I ran my hands up the muscle of his back over his tee and continued. But we should probably not be having sex on the couch when my parents knock on the door. He lifted his head out of my neck and grinned at me. Stoned, not stoned, alert, drowsy, preoccupied, focused, I didn't care. Whenever Logan grinned at me, I loved it. And this was no exception.
Babe, it's just past two,
he informed me. And I'm making a roast, I informed him.
It take 4 hours to make a roast?
He asked. No, but when you're in a certain mood, it takes you 4 hours to get me off. He burst out laughing. His arms convulsing around me, so he was squeezing me to his body. I watched him do it, smiling and loving that too. While he was still chuckling, he moved in, nipping my lower lip before gliding his lips against my jaw to my ear.
How about 2 hours? He asked there. Can my girl give me 2 hours to have fun before she worries about a roast?
I suppose I can give you 2 hours. I said on a sigh, faking that it was a hardship when it absolutely wasn't. He lifted his head again and smiled at me. His smile faded as he moved in to brush his lips against mine. He kept them there and held my gaze as he said, "Smoking again, doing it while I watch you blow me." Oh, God. Total turn-on. I loved his cock any way I could get it, including that way. My legs moved with agitation. His eyes started smoldering.
"See, you like that idea."
"Yeah, baby," I whispered.
"On the floor between my legs or on the couch?"
Humor mingled with the heat in his eyes when he finished.
"Between my legs?"
I wasn't feeling in a funny mood. I was feeling in the mood to give my man a blowjob while he smoked a joint. "What do you want?" I asked. At my question, Logan got in my mood. I knew this when he growled, "Floor." "Whatever you want, Snooks," I whispered. I gave him those words. Logan gave me a kiss. When he ended it, I couldn't wait to give back and do it going down on him. So I didn't mess around. I sucked while he smoked until he set the joint aside and let his head loll on the back of the couch so he could concentrate on what I was doing. His head didn't loll when I stopped sucking, climbed on, and started writing. His attention was all on me. We were done in time for me to get the roast in, and we had a great time with my family, as we always did, after they'd realized Logan was it for me and believed in it, believed in him, and let him in. Then, after we ate, played board games, and they left, Logan and I had another great time. But this time, when we did, he took his 4 hours. And another one besides. Falling asleep twined up in my man, I thought it was what it always was. The best. And I slept sound, knowing I had the best, got it early, and also understanding to the heart of me that I would have a lifetime of it. A lifetime of Logan. A lifetime of the best. Chapter 9. Far Behind. Millie. My phone on my nightstand rang. I opened my eyes, rolled, looked at the clock to see it was 6 after 11, then pushed up to look at the display on my phone. Kelly. This happened not frequently, but it happened. Usually I ignored it. She held no grudges. She knew me. She knew it was a long shot, but she never gave up on wanting me to have a life. However, I'd spent the day making sure an anniversary party would go off without a hitch. It did, so I was even less inclined than normal, when I was never inclined, to pick up and do the Kelly thing. But I was also committed to living my life for the ones I loved. Logan had walked out 2 days earlier, and he had not come back. For my part, since then, I had not faltered in continuing the charade. Tomorrow night, Dot, Alan, and the kids were coming over for beef stroganoff. Further, Justine and Veronica were looking for a babysitter, so we could plan a night where we could all put on our LBDs, go out, and drink cocktails. Claire was all in for that one, and without a kid or a steady who was truly a steady, she was ready when we were set to roll. In other words, full steam ahead on the charade. Now it was time to prove to Kelly I'd turned a new leaf and intended to go back to living my life. So I snatched up the phone, took the call, and put it to my ear. "Hello, babe," I greeted, still shaking away sleep.
"She answers!"
Kelly hooted in a shriek in my ear, so I had to pull the phone away an inch.
"Right on!"
she kept shrieking. I put my phone back to my ear and said, "Love you, you know it, but don't love you phoning me and shouting in my ear in the middle of the night."
3 o'clock in the morning is the middle of the night, Mill. 11 o'clock is not," she informed me.
"Whatever," I muttered.
"Why are you calling?" "'Cause there is this kick-ass band you have to see playing right now at the Roll. They just finished their first set, bitch, and they brought down the house. Get your ass out of bed and get it over here, pronto, or I'm never speaking to you again in my life."
The last 12, 13 years, I'd quit answering Kelly's late-night calls. The years between being with Logan and not answering her calls, I did take her calls, but would then engage in a long conversation about how I needed sleep, how I had work the next day, how I was no longer into live music or doing shots or whatever, this taking time and getting frustrating, hence my quitting answering. But undoubtedly, she'd spoken to Dot and or Justine, so she'd know about LBDs and beef stroganoff. She'd heard about Downton Abbey or come over and see my candles lit and me using my wine glasses. So in order to prove to her I was living my life at the same time hiding that I was dead inside, I replied, "I'll be there in an hour." Silence that wasn't silence, exactly, since I heard the crowd in the background as well as the music they were playing between the live sets. Then I heard, "Say again?" I threw back the covers and reached for my light. "Give me an hour and I'll see you there." I had to take the phone away from my ear again when she screeched, "Right on!" That made me grin, and grinning made me realize I was doing the right thing, because no matter how I felt down deep, I was giving the people I loved what they needed. I should have done it a long time ago. It was too late for that now, but better late than never. And anyway, I did like live music, and it had been ages since I'd seen a band play. Not to mention my little black dress was killer, so I was also going to be sure to find some time to go out with Justine and Veronica. They needed excuses to pretty up and remember why they fell in love in the first place. That being, they were both hot, funny, got a kick out of each other, and post-baby that Justine carried, they were still way into each other. Last, I had decided I was totally getting Cats. I had it all, lost it all, and knew I'd never get it back. But lonely was lonely, and lonely sucked, so I was going to cut the lonely with kitties. I pushed up from bed and headed to the bathroom, ordering, "Now hang up so I can slap some makeup on and head out."
"You got it, bitch. Get that ass in gear. See you soon. Yeehaw!"
Kelly cried before I heard her disconnect. I got my ass in gear and started going through the motions. When I got a look at myself in the bathroom mirror, I saw that I'd not been in bed long enough for my hair to go wonky, so that was good. Therefore, I slapped on a fair amount of makeup because good rock and roll demanded sacrifice, and it had been a while, but I knew the depletion of your makeup collection was an acceptable offering. I no longer had rock and roll clothes, but I did my best, throwing on a pair of faded jeans, high-heeled booties, a thick belt, and a thin mulberry sweater that looked torn up and misshapen. But it did this with intent, clinging in the right places, flowing and keeping you guessing in better places. I wrapped a narrow rock and roll-ish scarf around my neck and stuck long silver hoops in my ears, piling on the rings and jingling bracelets before shoving lip gloss and wallet into an envelope clutch, grabbing my suede jacket and heading out. I hit the Roll, a place that was half bar, half club, and had live music on the weekends and some weeknights, this being the club part. But mostly it was a watering hole that I'd heard was a hip place, via Kelly. Therefore, I knew where it was, but it had started up after Logan and I were over, so I'd never been there. And I hit it, not liking what I saw, considering the parking lot was jammed and there was a line out the door. I parked on the street two blocks away, got out, and started toward the bar, even knowing this effort to convince Kelly I was moving out of years of grieving a life gone bad was going to fail. I'd have to pick another night to do that, because no way was I standing out in the cold in a line by myself for God knew how long in order to have a few drinks and listen to music. And as I walked toward the bar, I had my phone to my ear to tell Kelly precisely that. This decision took a hit when she answered, and I heard the unmistakable truth that the band was back on stage and they were rocking it even through a cell phone. "Yo!" she shouted. "Babe, there's a line," I told her. "It's cold and the line's long. I probably wouldn't get in until the final set, and no way I'm standing outside for hours for that." "Leave it to me. Just go to the door," she replied on another shout. "Kelly," I started, but I was talking to dead air. She was gone. "Fuck," I hissed, deciding the next time she called that I'd prove my new leaf by ignoring the call, phoning her the next day, and having her over for stroganoff or some other brilliant meal I taught myself how to make. I then hoofed it to the door, knowing no way with this crowd they were going to let in a 41-year-old woman who might have good hair, a great suede jacket, and fabulous high-heeled booties because she was still 41 and no one in line looked over 23. However, when I got to the door, the bouncer gave me a top-to-toe, grinned, and then turned to look behind him when he heard shouted, "She's with me!" Kelly was head and shoulders out the door. The bouncer nodded to her, turned to me, lifted a hand, and did a
get your ass in there gesture, to which someone at the head of the line groused, seriously, dude? Been standing out here an hour? What the fuck? I ignored the discontent coming from the line, muttered thanks to the bouncer as I moved swiftly past him, got a no problem, sweetheart, which was nice, but probably had more to do with Kelly being irregular than me having good hair or a great jacket. But I still turned my head and gave him a smile. He gave me a wink. He couldn't be more than 32, so that felt nice. I let it feel nice, then let it go and moved to Kelly. This'll be so worth it, she declared before I could even say hello, her words strangely heavy with meaning. She reached out a hand and nabbed mine as she spoke. Before I could reply or figure out the weight of her words, she tugged me inside, the door closing the cold behind us, leaving us in the warm that wasn't just the inside of a building, but the inside of a bar heaving with people. And this was when I realized my mistake. I'd gone cold turkey on life when I'd ended things with Logan, so I hadn't been to a place like this since then, except my brief visit to Scruff's a few weeks earlier. That didn't count. This was it. This was where it was at. This was one of a bevy of things back in the day that filled me up and kept life beautiful. The sights, the lights, the people, the sounds, the vibe. Electric. Alive. Not me. So not me. Not anymore. I was there, feeling it, immune to it, and missing it all at the same time. The last like an ache because when I'd had it with Logan. Yes. Big mistake. Huge. I had to get out of here. I couldn't go. Dragging me with her, Kelly wended her way expertly through the crowd to a table back in the jumble around a stage where music was blasting. Good music. The band was excellent. I didn't look at the band. I concentrated on getting where Kelly was guiding me without slamming into someone in a chair or a waitress negotiating tables and bodies. Kelly got us to her table, which was populated by two men and another woman, none of whom I knew, all of whom looked to us as we got there. These are my best friends for the night, since they let me sit at their table, she shouted, Kelly being one who could make friends anywhere, and did, and thus could go out without a girl posse, and did. She threw her arm out their way. Jeff, Mark, and Helen. Hey, I yelled.
Yo,
Jeff or Mark yelled back. Mark or Jeff threw up his chin. Helen smiled, gave a slight wave, then looked back at the stage. Kelly tugged my hand again until I was sitting in one of the two vacant chairs. She sat in the other one and expertly snagged a passing waitress. 12 shots of tequila, she shouted at her, and I felt my eyes get big. 2 for all and 4 for my girl here so she can catch up. 4 shots? Gotcha, the waitress yelled back and took off before I could stop her. I leaned into Kelly. Babe, I'm driving, I shouted. You're also going to be here a while and my new bud's got popcorn to soak up the booze, she shouted back, tipping her head to the table. I looked to the wax paper-lined red basket on the table that had, on a quick count, 7 popped pieces of corn and a plethora of unexploded kernels left in it. Then I looked back to Kelly, who was now eyes to the stage. Babe, I yelled. She kept staring at the stage, bobbing her head and not turning to me, so I yelled again. Kelly! She leaned back my way, attention never leaving the band, and yelled back, They so need a dance floor here! This band makes you want to move! She was not wrong. They were currently kicking the Black Crows hard to handle, and doing it so brilliantly, if Chris Robinson was standing at the bar, he'd be smiling. My eyes started to move to the stage, but stopped, when someone slammed into my chair and my entire body jerked as my chair moved 3 inches toward Kelly's.
Whoa,
a man shouted, and I looked up at him.
Sorry.
I smiled. That's okay. He grinned back and moved on. I again was about to look at the stage when I heard,
Rumor was true. They get their old front man back whenever they come to Denver, and fuck if he doesn't rock.
This was shouted by Helen, and I looked to her just as the band ended the song, and she jumped up, as did everyone else at our table, at other tables,
all the people obscuring my view of the stage, and the crowd roared its approval. I started clapping and kept smiling because this wasn't so bad. I'd do a shot, maybe two, order a Coke, and listen to good music, sitting with my girl and her new friends. I'd be tired tomorrow, but it wouldn't kill me. Kelly would be happy, and that was all that mattered. Slower notes to a song I recognized started. The folks around drifted their asses back to their chairs, and a familiar voice sounded over the microphone.
This song is dedicated to a bitch named Millie.
My eyes shot to a stage I now could see, and my heart shriveled to dust when I saw Hopper Kincaid, back in the day a new Chaos Brother, and by his words undoubtedly still a Chaos Brother, standing front and center. His flame-tattooed arms were moving on the guitar he held. His eyes, filled with hate, were aimed at me.
Not good to see you again, he growled directly to me,
the dust of my heart floating away on his words. Then he played a few more notes and launched into the lyrics of Candleboxes Far Behind. I heard Kelly's totally pissed off, "What the fuck?" But I couldn't tear my eyes from Hop, lacerating the bloody pulp of my soul with every word of a sad, angry song. It was a fantastic song, but I'd never really listened to the lyrics. I listened to them then, and I knew they might mean one thing to Candlebox. They meant another to Hopper Kincaid and the family I once had that I loved, called Chaos. Last, they meant something else entirely to me. And as he tore through me with that song, intentionally lashing wounds that already were laid bare and never would heal, I heard Kelly snap, "I didn't buy into this shit!" And I knew. I fucking knew. I was not there because Kelly got a wild hair to drag me back to life. I was there because of something else. I ripped my stare off Hop and looked through the bar, knowing what I'd find before I found it. Then I found it. Off to the side of the stage, at their own table with a reserved sign on it, sat Tack Allen. With him was his woman, Tyra, also the one they referred to as Lainey. Worse, Boz, Hound, Big Petey, and Logan. The men were aiming their loathing at me. It hit true, the toxin coating my skin and sinking deep. The women were looking shocked. They got to Kelly. They got to my girl. And she'd jumped on board being fed promises of healing wounds that had no cure, not having any clue their play would end me. I shot out of my chair, tucking my purse under my arm, and rounded the table, winding my way their way, eyes to my guess at the ringleader, Tack's new woman.
Millie!
Kelly screamed. I ignored her and kept going, brushing people, twisting past chairs. Well before I got to the Chaos table, all were standing, the men in aggressive, defensive postures, the women uncertain. I stopped at their table, Hound stepping mostly in front of me, but I kept my eyes pinned to Tyra.
Stop!
I shouted, knowing my face was twisted, certain it was ugly, but not caring, only needing one last thing before I ceased to exist. And that was to get my message across.
I,
she began, but I cut my gaze to Tack. Make her stop, I demanded.
Millie.
That was Logan. He was close. I could hear it and I could feel it. But I had eyes to Tack, who was injecting my bloodstream with the venom of his gaze at the same time opening his mouth to speak. Kelly got there before him.
You motherfuckers, she screeched. Total fucking bitches! You played me! You goddamn fucking bitches got me to play my own girl! She shrieked.
Tack looked from me to Kelly, then down to his woman.
Tell me you did not, he growled.
She looked up at him, face pale.
Kane, honey,
Millie.
That was Logan again, and I felt his hand on me. It burned. God, it burned. Seared. Scorched my flesh to nothing. I twisted my arm viciously, yanking away, slamming into Kelly, and tipping my head back to look up at him. I lifted my hand, pointing a finger an inch from his face. I couldn't shroud the agony, and I didn't care about that either when I shouted, "Make them stop!"
"Babe,"
he began, lifting his hand, but before he could get to mine, I tore it away. "I'm done walking through fire for you, Hi!" I yelled. "I'm done not because I'm done, but because there's nothing left of me to burn. You had it all. You've always had it all. I gave up everything so you could have it all. Please, God, leave me to my nothing." I swung an arm out to their table. "And if you gave one single shit about me ever, make them let me have my nothing." On that, I pushed, shoved, desperate to get to a place where I could completely fade away and do it alone. Having been given too much too soon, and paying the price by having it ripped away, so that was all I'd ever have. Nothing. All I'd ever be. Alone. With all that, I made my final dash through the flames, making my way through the bar, out, and I ran to my car on my high heels. Destined to fade away. Ready to fade away. Needing nothing but to leave it all far behind. Hi.
"Woman, I fucking told you,"
Hi heard Tack snarl. But he couldn't pay any mind to what was unraveling because Cherry couldn't keep herself to herself. He was moving. Moving to get to Millie, her words battering his brain. "I gave up everything so you could have it all." And then he was not moving because Kelly was in his space, in his face.
"You fucking motherfucker!"
she screamed, shoving at his chest. His body locked, his jaw tightened, and both were good because they stopped him from reciprocating in any way when she shoved him again.
"You ruined her!"
she shrieked, and his locked body strung tight.
"Wasn't that enough?"
she asked.
"Do you and your bitches gotta get your jollies by fucking her up again?"
She looked beyond him in the direction of the table.
"Newsflash, assholes, there was nothing to fuck up. She was gone. You didn't need to make the effort, but awesome,"
she snapped sarcastically.
"You hit it just right, bringing back the only fucking thing on this earth that would tear her shreds into tatters."
And on the last, she jerked a thumb High's way.
"Memory serves, bitch. Someone else was in shreds after your gash laid him to waste,"
Boz returned.
"Oh, yeah?"
Kelly asked, eyes narrowed dangerously on his brother.
"Yeah,"
Boz shot back.
"You didn't see."
Hop was now at their table, the band still playing on stage, but the players embroiled in the current mindfuck could be anywhere. Their attention completely on what was happening right there, right then. Especially when Kelly whispered those three words. And how she did it. They all heard it. Hi could sense how they heard it. But he felt it. Each word.
"What didn't we see?"
Pete asked. Hi watched Kelly's body twitch, then she shook her head.
"You don't deserve to know that. You don't deserve."
She looked to High.
"Dick."
She raised a hand to point a finger in his face.
"Keep the fuck out of her life, asshole. Leave her alone."
"She left me,"
High growled.
"Wasn't her who walked away,"
Kelly returned. High's shoulders strained taut in a way it felt any movement would make them snap. Jesus. Fuck.
Jesus.
"Was her who told him to get gone,"
Boz pointed out angrily.
"Wasn't her who walked away and didn't come back,"
Kelly replied to Boz, but the words were for High, and he knew it from more than the fact that she didn't take her eyes from him. She was whispering in a heaving bar with a rock band playing, but he heard every word clear.
"You didn't come back,"
she repeated. Got up on her toes, her gaze locked to his, and sneered.
"So who left who behind, asshole?"
On that, She rolled back on her heels, sent a poison look through them all, turned and stormed through the tables. Hai watched her go, frozen. You love a man, Millie. You believe in him. You take him as he is. You go on his journey with him no matter what happens, even if that means you have to walk through fire. He'd said that. 20 years ago, he'd said that. Looking into her eyes, feeling so much, he didn't see shit. He didn't see what was in her eyes. I'm done walking through fire for you, Hai. Jesus. Newsflash, assholes, there was nothing to fuck up. She was gone. Fuck. She was gone. He knew it. He saw it. Her house, her clothes, her office. The only time she was back was when he had her in his arms. So who left who behind, asshole? Fuck. He came unstuck just as a hand landed on his shoulder. He turned to it.
Brother,
Tak said low.
Control your woman,
Hai ground out, shrugged off his brother's hand, and pushed through the bar to the door. He got to his bike, swung on, and took off. He hit every red light, every fucking one, before he parked right in front of Millie's house. He saw it was dark. He found this concerning. Jesus, her face at the bar. That was not anger. It wasn't frustration. It was anguish. Etched there. Hidden until then. It had leaked out. He'd seen it in her office. But he'd still refused to see. Fuck. He prowled up to her house, pounded on her door, and kept doing it. Nothing. No lights coming on. He sensed no movement through the sheer. He continued pounding. She could be ignoring him. The look on her face in that bar, she could be in there doing something else. He didn't have his picking kit, and he didn't have time to go get it. Furthermore, upon testing it, she had a deadbolt, so a credit card wouldn't work. That meant he had to take off his cut, wrap it around his fist, and punch through her glass. He did it, unlocked the door, pushed it open, and went in, his boots crunching through the shards. He went right to her bedroom, switched on the light, and his lungs expanded so sharp he thought they'd explode. Shit was everywhere. Clothes, shoes, drawers open, stuff hanging out. He jogged to the bathroom and found more of a mess. Fuck, did she do this or was someone waiting for her? Was this a struggle or a frenzy? Was someone paying attention to what Hai was doing, where he was going, who he was doing, and they targeted Millie to get to Hai? To chaos? Shit, had Valenzuela finally lost patience and made his play? With Millie? Fuck, could their luck suck that bad? He jogged out of the bathroom, her bedroom, into the house, finding switches, turning on lights. Everything in the rest of the house was as it should be. Immaculate. He moved the back door, pulled the curtain aside, and looked through. No red SUV. He swiftly moved back through the house to the unused bedroom, going straight to the closet. Her luggage was gone. It was frenzy. It was Millie. It was Millie packing in a rush to get away from him and to get away from Tyra and her crew's bullshit.
Goddamned fucking shit,
he bit out, yanking out his phone. It was then Hai made the call he'd not made in 20 years. It rang 5 times, and then he heard, Hello, you've reached the voicemail of Millie Cross of Cross Events. I'm unable to take your call right now, but leave a... He hung up and tried again. Voicemail again. He went to the email with the file Shirlene sent and pulled it up. He stared at it, scrolling through with his thumb to get the number he needed. He decided to start with phoning. He'd see where that got him and make his next move. So he punched in Dottie's number. It was picked up on the second ring, and Hai got a pissed male voice who didn't bother with a greeting.
I know who the fuck this is, and I know your shit is done, the man stated. She's gone. Let her be gone and stop dicking with her head.
Hai studied his boots and ordered,
Listen to me.
The man cut him off.
You got nothing to say I want to hear. Nothing Dot wants to hear. Sure as fuck nothing Millie wants to hear. It's over, man, and it's that in a way you got no choice. So let it go.
I don't know you, bud,
Hai started.
But I know you weren't around then, so you don't know dick about what's happening, so you don't know I gotta speak to Millie. And you don't know how I gotta speak to Millie. You got no call to trust me, but I'm asking you to trust this. It's urgent. Only chance you got of getting your urgent message to her is if you can send smoke signals. She can read them and she sees them before she gets her ass on a plane. Dot and her are on their way to the airport. She'll be gone before you can get your bike parked out there.
Fuck.
DIA? Hai prompted. Far away from you, the man replied. First hit, red eye to New York. Second hit, Paris. Think that's far enough she can get her head together and sort out her life. But man, I'm telling you this for the sole purpose that you'll get the message. She's not coming back. She's putting distance between her and here, which means her and you. And she's gonna keep that up one way or another, and I mean physically. Denver is a memory for her because you need to be a memory for her. And while I got you, bud, thanks. He spat the last word. Thanks for taking our girl away from us. The aunt my kids fucking love, the sister my wife adores, the woman I met who's got no light in her, but she's still got enough love in her to light up the worlds of the people who matter. That's lost to us now because of you. Thanks for that, asshole. Thanks a fucking lot.
And with that, he hung up. Hai dropped his hand to his hip, fingers still curled around his phone, and he studied the toes of his boots. Not sure you can get a passport in a day, Logan.
You want to go to Paris? I'll find a way.
She went to Paris. He knew from what Charlene and Brody found that Millie had never left the country, but she did have a passport. And she was using it to go to Paris. Without him. Leave me to my nothing. Hai had a choice. Lead with his heart and get an emergency passport, get Brody on finding her, and get his ass to France so he could find out what in the fuck was going on. Or lead with his gut, knowing a woman could not change her entire life from Paris. She had a business. She had a home. She'd be back. And when she was back, she'd be calmer. She'd have taken the time to get herself together. And he'd know when she was back because he'd have Brody on that too. Then he'd talk to her right there in that fucked up immaculate house, and then he'd finally find out what in the fuck was going on. He wanted to lead with his heart. All he could see was her face at the roll. All he could hear were her words clawing at his soul. But he'd gone with his heart with Millie before. He'd sustained the blows she was delivering, not paying a lick of attention, walking away in an effort to end the pain. If he'd gone with his gut back then, he'd have paid attention. He'd have seen. He'd have heard. He wouldn't have left her behind. He would have known all she spewed was shit, and he would have gone back. Fuck, he muttered. Gut, he decided. It cost him, but Hai went with that decision. But before he did, he went to get his truck, drove to Ride, got some plywood, and went back to Millie's to board up her door. Tyra.
I followed Tack into our bedroom. He turned on the light, moved to the bed, sat on it, and bent to his boots. I closed the door behind me and stood leaning against it. The drive up the mountain was silent and uncomfortable. My man was mad. Kane, I started. He lifted his head to look at me and I shut my mouth.
I told you, he rumbled.
You don't understand, honey, I said softly.
No,
he bit,
standing.
You don't understand, Tyra.
He planted his hands on his hips.
Fuck, woman. Can you honest to God stand there and fight your corner after witnessing how your fucked up shit played out tonight?
There can't be that much feeling unless there's that much feeling, Kane, I pointed out.
Tell me, Red, when we were getting together, you gutted me and I walked away from you. Made it clear I wanted nothing more to do with you even if you sorted your head out. Some bitch you didn't fucking know got up in your business, shoving you at me only for you to take the hit of getting shot down again and again and again. The brothers at my back delivering the same kind of blows. You'd want that?
If I got you back? Yes, I whispered. I'd take any hit over and over and over again until I got you back. He stared at me. I held his stare and let the silence stretch. Then I ended it. Tell me you saw her tonight, I said. He looked away, tearing his hand through his hair. He saw. She's in pain, I told him something he now knew. He looked back at me.
None of our business.
Honey. His next came as a warning whisper.
None of our business, Red.
He drew in breath and kept his eyes locked to mine.
You know it. You know how it is. Those boys, my brothers, your brothers, they fucking love you, babe. Totally fucking love you. But you know men like us. You fucking know down to your soul men like us. You know this shit is not on. Your purpose is compassionate. But men like us, your methods are unacceptable.
He kept hold of my eyes and dropped his voice to gentle.
And you know it, baby. So you know this is none of our business.
She might do something, I started. He cut me off.
I'll keep an eye.
I nodded. I'd take that because I had to, but also because I knew he would.
You done now?
He asked. I shook my head and saw his jaw grow hard. But I told him, I don't like it. But I think I have to be. His face relaxed and his order was quiet and coaxing.
Get ready for bed, darling.
I nodded again and went about doing that. I joined my man in bed. I didn't sleep. My husband felt it.
You need to relax, he said.
Do you think that High's going to...
I think it's none of our business.
I lifted my head. Tack.
Babe? No.
Two words. Firm. And he went on just like that.
You are who you are and I'm with you because of that. I am who I am and you're with me because of that. What we got, it works phenomenally. We do what we do, we are what we are, and we get off on it, no holding back. But this is us. That's the club. That's a brother. The same does not hold true with the brothers. You got your place in the club, I got mine. We know our place is Red, and we don't deviate. So until a brother makes something our business, it's none of our business, yeah?
I'm worried, I shared. There was a vein of amusement in his gravelly voice when he muttered,
Oh shit!
Tack! It was a lame snap. He pulled me deeper into his arms and held me close.
Hi and me have not seen eye to eye on numerous occasions over the years. But that don't mean he isn't chaos. He's chaos down to the bone. He's a brother of my soul. So what do you think he's gonna do?
There it was. Exactly what I needed. Take care of Millie, I whispered.
Yeah,
Tack whispered back, starting to stroke my hair.
Now, you gotta relax and go to sleep.
I'll try. He sighed. Then he rolled into me. Once there, he muttered,
Know a way to make you relax.
He knew about 7,000 of them. Before I could say a word, he dipped his head to me, took my mouth, and set about making me relax. Hi. The next day, Hi was back at Millie's to be there when the men he called replaced the glass with another thick, bevel-edged sheet. Due to the fact that he swiped an extra key, he was also there 3 days later when the men he called installed the alarm system, which meant all the glass, windows, and doors throughout her house were wired for break-ins. And he took the call when Brody told him what hotel she was staying at in Paris. He also took more calls when she used a card so Brody could tell him where she had breakfast, lunch, dinner, got money, what tours she went on, where she shopped, and what she bought. Last, Brody told Hi when she'd be back. 2 weeks. He had to depend on his gut for 2 weeks. He applied for an emergency passport anyway, just in case. Millie, 21 years ago.
Brother's bummed,
Dog stated. I looked from the recruit behind the bar at the Chaos compound, a recruit who was no longer a recruit, and that was why we were all partying since he and his new brother, Brick, had been fully initiated into the fold the day before, to the couch where Dog's eyes were aimed. Boz was slouched there, deep in the seat, legs splayed wide, eyes aimed across the room. Dog was right. Boz looked bummed. Someone had to do something about that, and I decided that someone would be me. I turned back to Dog and grinned. This is a party, so that can't happen. He looked to me and winked.
Go get him, girl.
I slid off my bar stool, grabbed my beer, and said, tequila, stat. Dog turned, nabbed a bottle of tequila from the back of the bar, and handed it to me. I lifted it. Perfect medicine. At that, he smiled and muttered, no doubt. I tipped my head and smiled back, then moved through the room, past the pool tables, toward Boz, my feet in biker boots, my ass covered in cutoffs, my top barely covered in a halter. As I approached Boz, he didn't even look at me. The guys looked, they hugged, they even touched a hand or a waist, sometimes a tug of the hair. I was a girl, I was showing skin. They were men in the sense they were men. This happened. But I was an old lady, so it happened in a certain way that would not communicate anything that Logan wouldn't like. It was respect to him. It was also respect to me. It was chaos. I finally got Boz's attention when I threw myself onto the couch beside him and declared, "Know a boy who looks like he needs a buzz." He smiled a smile that didn't reach his eyes, then tipped his head to the bottle.
You gonna take care of that for me?
I extended the tequila. Absolutely. He grabbed it, murmuring,
gratitude, sister.
Sister. I sighed happily and slouched next to him, our bodies touching from shoulders to knees. He uncapped the bottle, flicked the top, and it flew, then skidded across the floor, unheeded, several feet away. I watched as he took a healthy tug. When he dropped the bottle, I asked, you okay?
I'm good, Millie, he told the room.
And he lied. I looked from him to the room and I saw the party. I also saw something else. I was an old lady, so I wasn't let in on a number of things. If the boys were at our place and conversation turned to something that wasn't mine to know, Logan gave me a look I knew and acted on without question. I then would get out of earshot, going upstairs to listen to music in our bedroom, or going to the second bedroom to study. That didn't mean I didn't hear things or see things. And right then, I saw things. What I saw was Tack, Brick, Hop, and Black standing in one corner, huddled and talking, beers in their hands, none of this happening in a way that seemed they were at a party. I also saw Naomi, Tack's old lady, sitting at a table with Keely, Big Petey, and Bev, a new girl who was hanging around that Boz normally, if he wasn't in a crappy mood, would be paying attention to. Keely, Bev, and Big Petey were shooting the shit. Naomi had all her attention focused on her old man, and she didn't look happy. The woman rarely looked happy, but in this instance, she looked less happy. And last, in another corner, I saw Chu and Arlo talking with my man. They stood with Crank. Crank was Chaos's president. Crank was a decent guy, but he was also the only one who kind of freaked me out. I couldn't put my finger on it, but every brother I knew was genuine. They were who they were and showed it. No bullshit. I got a weird feeling that what made Crank went deeper, possibly darker. That feeling told me he didn't share it all. And it was so stark compared to how all the other brothers were, it freaked me. I watched and saw that Crank right then was not paying attention to Chu, Arlo, or Logan, who were also huddled and talking. He was staring at Tack in a way I found chilling. I didn't know what this meant. All I knew was that Brick and Dog were fresh brothers. Hop, too. And they'd all been recruited by Tack. All the brothers could put forward a man to become a recruit, but Tack had been busy the last few years. I also knew Chu, Arlo, Boz, and Logan had all been recruited by Crank. So had Black. But Black was standing with Tack. There was a split. I felt it. It wasn't tension. Nothing with the brothers was that perceptible. But there was a vibe. Things were changing in the club in a lot of ways. The store and garage were getting busier, the club pushing for that, which meant Logan was working more. It also meant, since the brothers split any profits equally, he, which translated to we, was making more money. Like, a lot more money. Though there was more, and that more meant Logan was busy far more than he'd ever been before on club business that had nothing to do with the store or the garage. I got the sense he liked it at the same time I got the contradictory sense that it troubled him. I also got a sense that whatever this was a money-making venture that had nothing to do with selling auto supplies and building custom bikes and cars, or even growing and selling pot. Logan didn't talk about it, and I knew he wouldn't, so I didn't ask, so I couldn't know. This troubled me. That concern didn't run deep. I wasn't out and out worried. I wasn't questioning things. I knew these men. I knew this family. I also knew they were bikers, lived in their own world, had their own rules, and did things their own way, and those things were whatever the hell they wanted to do. Last, I knew that if they stayed solid and strong, they could get away with doing whatever the hell they wanted to do. In fact, their bond was so powerful, if they stuck together, they could achieve anything. This was the part that troubled me. Because I sensed a split, I sensed that Boz didn't know which way he was leaning. And I saw that it seemed that Logan had cast his lot with Crank, and I didn't know if that was the right choice. I sipped my beer, staring at my man, watching him nod at something Arlo was saying, lost in these thoughts until I felt my knee nudged by Boz. I looked to him, and at what I saw in his eyes, I held my breath. "It's always gonna be good," he said quietly. "Okay," I replied, just as quiet.
"I will make it that way for you, babe. You know it, yeah?"
Something was wrong in the club. But I knew what Boz said was right, and that was all that I needed. "Yeah," I whispered. He grinned at me, and it again didn't reach his eyes. Then he kept doing it and finally committing to it when he offered the bottle of tequila to me.
"Time for us to get smashed, gorgeous," he declared.
I took the bottle from him and replied, "No truer words were spoken." Then I threw back a healthy slug.
"That's my girl,"
Boz stated, and when I looked at him, he had humor and approval gleaming in his eyes. His earlier look of uncertainty and disquiet was gone. I'd done my job. So I handed him the bottle and slouched deeper into the couch, slouching into Boz as he shifted to curl an arm around me, and I shifted to curl my legs on the seat, resting my head on his shoulder.
"Don't get comfortable,"
he warned, giving me a squeeze.
"After another couple of shots, I'm kicking your ass at pool."
"The hell you are," I returned.
"We're 15 and 12 with me being the 15 and about to make it 16. "Bullshit."
"You'll see," I muttered, sucking back more beer. When I was done, the tequila was in front of my face and I took the bottle from Boz. I also threw back another slug. When I was done with that, my eyes hit on my man. He was smiling at me, his smile content and not troubled. I knew it before, but I knew it even more then. Boz was right. Whatever was happening in the club would happen. But Logan would keep it good for me. It'd never touch me. Not ever. Not ever. Chapter 10. Finally. Millie. I sat in the back of the taxi, exhausted beyond comprehension, my phone to my ear. No, I'm good, Dot, I told my sister, a complete and total lie since travel and jet lag were kicking my ass. Is my car at my house? Alan and I took it there yesterday, babe. Also straightened up a bit, she shared cautiously, giving me the information and doing it, not wanting to remind me why my place was left the way it was. But do you think you should stay there? She asked, then suggested, maybe you should stay over here. I wanted to stay with my sister and Alan and the kids for as long as I could stay with my sister and Alan and the kids, since I intended to move as soon as I could to Arizona, and I wouldn't be able to see them whenever I wanted to see them. But I was wiped, and being wiped and needing sleep and clear headspace to get on with doing what I needed to do were not conducive to having two kids under the age of 10 in the house. I'm gonna crash at my place, I told her. And I'll be fine, I assured hurriedly, hoping she'd believe me even knowing she wouldn't. I just need to get my head together, start getting other things together, and maybe tomorrow night I can come and stay with you. You can stay with us any time, you know that, she replied. I did. And I would. For as long as it took me to sort things out with work, get my house on the market, and get the hell out of Denver. Right, I said. I'm almost home. When I get there, I'm going right to bed. When I can think straight, I'll call you and we'll plan. Okay? Okay, Mill. Whatever you need. That was what it had always been from Dottie. Whatever I needed. And nearly 2 weeks ago, after I'd driven like a lunatic to get home after what happened at the roll, packing like a crazy person, only grabbing the things I needed, all this so I could get out of there and fast, just in case Logan got a wild hair and followed me, she'd again done just that. Given me what I needed. I'd woken them up when I'd made it to their house. Then I'd blathered and bawled, letting it all hang out, everything from what happened in Logan's RV to Hop singing Far Behind and all the rest. As he listened, Alan, a good man, a good husband, a guy who loved his wife like crazy and loved her sister too, had kept it together by the skin of his teeth. I knew he was close to ballistic. That ballistic being hunting Logan down and giving it his all to beat the crap out of him, which would be an interesting scenario, as Alan was a badass, so it would be a close match, though I suspected Logan would fight dirty. But he didn't lose it, because at that moment he needed to be all about me and doing what he could to help his woman help her sister. And that he did. Dottie had kept it totally together, as usual, and got online to get me covered. She'd also let me borrow things to take with me. One sorted, something that at Dottie's hand didn't take long, we got in the car and she stole me away to the airport. It had taken ages, but I'd eventually landed in France. I'd then had my first vacation since ever, doing it the first week communicating liberally with Claire, Justine, Dottie, and various clients. I did this with the girls so they had my work covered. It took all of them pitching in, and they all did. Loved my girls and owed them huge. I'd also phoned my parents in Arizona and sorted that out. Then I'd found a real estate agent. Last, I'd had several in-depth conversations with Claire, who had been with me a long time, who knew what she was doing, demonstrated this repeatedly over the years, but did it more by covering my shit while I took off to another country and had a mini nervous breakdown. She was considering buying me out. It'd take her years. She'd have to do it in installments. And she didn't much like the idea. She liked working with me and actually preferred being an assistant and not having the headaches of being the boss. But she knew she was good at what she did. The clients knew her and trusted her. She could keep cross events functioning and successful, and she could make a whole lot more as the boss. So she was considering it. That was all I'd managed to do while I was away, partly because I was in a different time zone on a different continent, so there wasn't much more I could do. But mostly it was because I was taking my first vacation, ever, and I was in Paris. And I was in Paris at the perfect time because it was November. The place wasn't overrun with tourists, and there were actually Parisians in the city. Parisians, I was told while I was there, did their best to take off when the place was covered in tourists. Thus, I decided my experience was more authentic. It was chilly, but it was amazing. So beautiful, it almost seemed unreal. So I ate. I drank. I roamed. I shopped. I got on tour buses, rode, took pictures, and listened to not very good tapes telling me what things were. I got out of the city and saw Versailles. I sat in spectacular gardens and people watched. I spoke broken French to French people who were a lot friendlier than I'd expected them to be. I had intended to spend 2 full weeks there, but it finally occurred to me I was hemorrhaging money, having a Parisian getaway breakdown when my future was uncertain. Therefore, I cut my visit 2 days short, thus necessitating a variety of flight changes that were not the greatest. But they got me home. And I got what I needed from Paris. I'd come to terms with what was left of my life. And what I came to terms with was that I was not beaten. I was angry. 20 years ago, I'd broken up with Logan. Yes, we were in love, deeply in love. Yes, we were happy. Yes, we had it all. Because I gave it all to him. Sure, he gave it back, but I was the best old lady ever. Keely absolutely adored Black. She had old lady down pat, but I was even better than her. And I was totally better than Naomi, who frankly was mostly a bitch. So I was glad Tack had moved on, though I was not admitting it since I was also ticked at Tack and his new woman. And most importantly, I'd ended it for him. For Logan. Logan didn't know that, but I did, damn it. What I didn't do was cheat on him. Steal from him. Stick him with a knife while he was sleeping because he didn't buy me a diamond bracelet I wanted, since I didn't want any diamond bracelet, just him. Burn down the house in a fit of pique to make a point about him not doing the dishes. We were together. We broke up. 20 years ago. People broke up all the time. He had to get over himself. But he'd have to do it without me. He thought I had to pay? Well, maybe he was right and I knew he didn't know. And I wasn't going to tell him, not ever. So being the man he was, he would think that. And I'd paid. Now I was done. No more. I hoped I communicated that to him and the rest of them that horrible night at the roll. I'd also spoken to Kelly, and she told me what she told them, so if I didn't communicate it to them, I hoped what she said did. But it didn't matter. I had set my course and it was time for massive change. A new life away from any possibility of seeing Logan at my home, having his people mess with my life, or even seeing him at a Chipotle ordering a burrito. I just hoped I could avoid any of that kind of thing before I was able to get myself gone. There was a lot to do. It would probably take weeks. During that time, after I got preliminary stuff sorted, I'd stay at Dottie and Allen's. I could work from there, too, unless I had to see a client, which meant going to my studio, and being at Dot and Allen's, I would hope, would mean Logan wouldn't mess with me. But if anything happened, if any of them did one single thing, I was calling the cops. Fuck them. All of them. Especially Logan. He was dead to me. All of Chaos were. They had to be so I could get on with what was left of my life. This was what I was intent on doing, after I slept for 3 days, when the taxi dropped me off behind my house. The driver took my luggage out of the trunk and put it inside the back door. I gave him a good tip. He smiled, and I didn't watch as he got in his cab and rolled away. I knew Dot had been in to turn up the furnace, straighten up, return my car, and make sure I had some food. So all I had to do was take off my clothes and drop in my bed. which was what I was going to do. I locked the door behind me and wandered into the living room, sliding the purse from my shoulder to toss on my couch, my feet set on a course for my bed.
Millicent Anna Cross.
I stopped dead as my body coated in ice when I heard a voice that shouldn't be coming at me from my living room. I looked and saw the man sitting in my cuddle chair, facing me, two men standing behind him. I'd never seen him before. He was dressed well, Hispanic, good-looking, and he seemed laid back. But he scared the holy shit out of me because I didn't know him. He knew me, and he was in my living room. I tensed to flee, but stopped as my head shot to the side when I felt movement there. Another man was coming close, and he had a gun pointed at me. I felt the blood drain from my face, and my eyes drifted back to the man in my cuddle chair, against their will, because I thought it pertinent to keep an eye on the guy with the gun. But the man in my chair spoke again, and he seemed the type of guy who liked to have people's attention when he talked. He also seemed the type of guy you didn't piss off, seeing as he was cool with breaking into a woman's home with his minions, one of whom pointed a gun at her. "You should know who I am, of course," he stated. "I'm Benito Valenzuela. Perhaps your man has mentioned me." I stared at him, fighting my body quaking, so aware there was an actual gun pointed at me, and scary people I did not know in my living room, that both these things felt like physical touches slithering against my skin, making the fight to stop shaking an extremely difficult one. "Has he?" the man asked. I kept staring and did it a while before it hit me he'd asked me a question. "Sorry," I croaked. "Has who what?"
"Has High mentioned me?"
Oh, fuck, 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 fuck. This guy was here because of chaos. This man was in my house with his minions, one of them training a gun on me, because of High. It was then I belatedly saw the crate sitting next to my cuddle chair. The crate I thought was lost. The crate with the pictures in it that I'd mourned. Until 2 weeks ago. Now, like a bad penny, it was back. But now I knew this man had taken it. Which meant he had an eye on my house. High coming. High going. Pictures of High and me in that crate. He had the wrong idea. Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck. "I see he hasn't," the man muttered, and my attention sliced back to him. "Chaos. The only thing we agree on is keeping Gash out of our business." I felt my mouth get dry. He tipped his head to the side.
"You've taken a lot of resources."
What? I asked when he didn't say anything further.
"Having a man at the airport waiting for you," he told me. "2 weeks? That's a lot of man hours."
More cold slinked over my skin. Why would he do that?
"Weak link,"
he said softly, something in his eyes changing, and I didn't like him or the situation before, but that change made me like it even less. "With Arlo out west and the situation here deteriorating, I had to find the weak link. The one with the hot head. The one who understands how the game is played. The last bastion of a lost empire. The one I could nudge to set things in motion." He lifted his finger, wagged it up and down my way, and whispered, "I'm nudging." "I don't know." I cleared my throat quickly when the words came out choked. "I don't know what you think, but I don't have anything to do with chaos." He shook his head, moved a hand, tapped the top of the crate beside him, and said,
"Hi, Judd, fucking you on your desk in that pretty little house out back says different."
"Oh, God. You watched?" I wheezed. He shook his head again.
"Not me. I missed that show, but I heard it was a good one."
"Oh, God." Now I was terrified and humiliated.
Now, he went on, I've waited some time for your return, and I'd rather not wait any more. You're home, so you can deliver a message for me.
Since delivering a message usually included being capable of doing that, this gave me hope that perhaps this scenario was not going to end how I feared it would. In other words, culminating in a variety of horrible, degrading, painful, and possibly deadly ways. So quickly I asked, what message? Eyes on me, slowly, he stood. I braced, doing it fearing my body would splinter into pieces, my attention keen on him. I experienced that sensation for far too long as he just stood there, staring at me. When I thought I'd scream, he said one word.
Nudge.
Then, just with that, he gave me a weird, frightening smile, looked to the men in the room, jerked his head, and they all walked to my hall and disappeared. I heard my front door open and close. I stood frozen to the spot, breaths coming in rasps, torn between running the other way and running their way to make sure they were gone. I heard a car start up outside, and I also heard it drive away. When I heard it no more, I moved. I did it fast, and I did it without thinking. My movements took me to the drawer in my kitchen that held a variety of things, all of it meticulously organized in trays. I grabbed my car keys and dashed out the back door. I didn't lock it. I ran to my car, got in, tossed my purse to the passenger seat, started up, turned the SUV around in my courtyard, and headed down my drive. I then took a trek I had not taken in 20 years. I drove to Broadway, down Broadway, direct to Ride Auto Supply, direct to chaos. I pulled in, drove down the side of the store, and saw the big garage in the back where they built their bikes and cars. I headed into the massive forecourt of the garage, turned left and parked outside the long building that ran the length of the space from the back of the store to the end of their property. The Chaos Compound. I parked, got out, and ran into the compound. I skidded to a halt in a place I knew like the back of my hand, hadn't seen in decades, and with the little I took in, noticed it hadn't changed a bit. I'd skidded to a stop at the curve of the bar that ran along the front of the room. There I saw Big Petey on a stool, and seeing a man I once cared about deeply, I couldn't hack it. So I looked behind the bar to a good-looking young blonde guy I didn't know and snapped, "Who's your president?" I was holding on by a thread. I was drained from travel, my body in a different time zone, and I'd had my home invaded by a man I knew was the worst news there could be.
"Say what?"
the blonde asked.
"Millie,"
Pete started, and I sensed him getting off his stool. I whipped up a hand, palm out his way, not looking from the blonde but declaring to Pete, "You don't exist." Then I used my hand to jab a finger at the blonde and demanded, "You tell me immediately, who's your president?" The blonde didn't look happy some strange woman was barking at him, but I didn't give that first fuck. I'd stand there and scream my question until I was hoarse in order to get an answer. The blonde opened his mouth to speak when I heard from behind me, "I am." I turned at the rough voice I knew all too well and watched Tack sauntering into the compound. He'd taken over. His side had won. And Logan was still chaos. This didn't surprise me in the least. Bottom line, no matter who held the gavel, Logan would be chaos. It was what he was. It was all he was. That filtered through me, but as it did, I didn't lose hold on my mission. I turned to Tack. "You have this one shot," I declared. "It happens again and I survive it, I'm going straight to the cops. I know Chaos doesn't like cops, and this is the final respect I pay the club. It happens again. I don't care if it brings down the Brotherhood. I'm going to the police." Tack didn't look from me when he ordered, "Snap, get high, now." "No," I yelled, panic leaking in, me beating it back, and I looked toward the bar to see the blonde moving the length of it. Don't you move, I cried. This is not about High. I do not want to see High.
Go,
Tack commanded. Fast! The blonde jogged out. Fuck. Focus. I had to focus.
Millie, sweetheart, you're riled up,
Big Petey said from behind me.
Come sit down, girl.
I didn't look away from Tack. You get him to back off, I demanded. You tell him I am not Chaos. You tell him to keep the fuck away from me.
You need to talk straight to High, Millie,
Tack returned, weirdly gentle, like he was handling me with care.
You know how it is, darling,
he finished.
Why?
I asked. He's not president.
It's his business, not mine,
Tack replied.
It is yours. It's,
I whirled a finger in the air, all of yours. Tack started to say something, but I felt a hand light on the small of my back, so I whirled when I scampered four steps deeper into the room, running into a chair and stopping.
Do not touch me,
I hissed at Big Petey. He flinched, his face turning haggard with worry. Then he looked at Tack. I also looked at Tack and saw him watching me closely.
High's at the store, Millie. He'll be here soon, Tack said.
I don't give a fuck where he is, I retorted. You're the president. You deal with shit like this. I know. I know this is your shit because he told me. Benito Valenzuela sat in my, I jerked a thumb toward myself, cuddle chair, while one of his minions pointed a gun at me, and he told me. The room, on alert, went wired, but I didn't give that first shit. Keep him away from me, I snapped. You don't, I call the cops. Your shit stopped infesting my life at the roll while Hop sang a Candlebox song.
Valenzuela visited you,
Tack asked, and I heard it. I heard the menace. Hell, I even felt it since it was clogging the room. He told me to tell you, nudge, I shared. I don't know what that means. I don't care. Just keep that asshole out of my life.
Millie, honey, you need to take a breath and take a seat. Let me get you a drink,
Pete offered, and I cut my eyes to him. I don't want a drink. I want nothing from Chaos except for them to get the fuck out of my life. I ended this screaming, and I ended it right before a door closed. I looked that way and saw the blonde. I also saw Hop. And further, I saw Logan. He looked surprised. He looked watchful. He also looked guarded. And he looked all of these as his attention was focused entirely on me. But the brutal beauty of the vision of him burned. Burned straight into my eye sockets, searing right into my brain. I'd let him go to give him everything. I'd searched for him to explain and say how sorry I was it had to be that way. And he'd used me, abused me, and torn me to shreds. Then his shit invaded my home, not the bad shit that was him and his brotherhood. The stinking pile of shit that was whatever mess Chaos was involved in with Benito Valenzuela, something they were clearly failing to control. This is the last time I see you, I told Logan.
Millie,
he said quietly, moving my way slowly.
Let's go back to my room so we can.
It happened then. There was no way to hold it back. I no longer had it in me. So I leaned his way and lost it. Completely.
This is the last time I see you, I screeched.
He rocked to a halt as my emotions scored jagged through the room. I looked to Tack and jabbed a finger his way again. You keep your business out of my business. I jabbed my finger toward Logan, but kept my gaze to Tack. And you keep him out of my life.
Millie, baby.
Logan, now talking gently, said as the door opened and Hound and Boz came in, eyes instantly darting around to take in the players. Come with me to my room. Fuck you, I spat at him and looked back to Tack. Deal with it. You don't. I will. And I was done. Even as the door opened again and Tyra and the tall, lanky, dark-haired guy that was with Tabby at Wild Bill's moved in, I started to make my way hurriedly toward the exit. I was stopped when Logan moved quickly to the side and caught my elbow. I twisted it out of his hold and scuttled away again, this time running into a table. Don't you ever again put your hand on me, I bit out. Mill, you never again touch me, I shrieked. Baby, he said softly, we gotta talk. My body snapped straight and my mouth moved. Yes, we do, I bit out. We absolutely do. While Tack deals with your little problem that's leaking into my life, I declared. Logan shot a quick glance at Tack, then back to me when I continued speaking. I'll talk. Then I kept right on going. Right on going. It was time. Time to fucking end this. He was going to get it all so I could do what he said he was going to do. Once and for always. Put him in my fucking rear view. My love for him. My longing for him. My grief for all we'd lost. My sorrow for all we'd never have. The burden I'd borne as I'd walked through fire for him and he'd thrown it all away, knocking up some bitch and making all I'd sacrificed not worth shit. I'm as good as gone, hi, I stated. I'm leaving Denver. But before I go, you get it. You get it all, so you'll know and I can be done with you. Millie, darling, fuck, please, come with me to my... I'm not going with you anywhere. I pointed a finger to the floor. This is happening here. He moved toward me. Babe, I'm begging you, please. I retreated, bumping into things and scurrying out of the way, warning, don't get any closer. You don't go with me there, I'm taking you there, he warned. He'd do that. I knew it. These men got what they wanted. They always got what they wanted. However they had to do that. The panic I was holding back started breaking through. Don't get near me, I yelled, still scurrying, needing to get this done, get out, get gone, and not needing to be alone with Logan.
Baby.
Don't call me that, I snapped, changing direction, watching him change direction with me, stalking me. Fuck, he clipped. Please! Stop moving, I demanded.
Millie.
He was getting closer, and I hit wall. I slithered along it, shouting, don't get near me!
God damn it, Millie!
I can't have children! I shrieked. Logan froze. I did too. All of me. Except my mouth. There, Logan! There!